Good evening, and you are most welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Tonight, we're going to be looking back at the announcement of a new solar farm here in the Midlands. But first up on the show, we're going to be looking at our transport infrastructure. And to discuss this more with me, I'm joined once again by Mary Donnelly, who's the chair of the Climate Advisory Council. Mary, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed, Aisling. Delighted to have the conversation with you.
Now, Mary, this report that was released over last week, it's commissioned by yourselves, the OECD is involved, and it's looked at the infrastructure we already have in place in Ireland. What are its findings in a nutshell, Mary?
So a number of findings. Firstly, we thought it would be very helpful to have an international organisation like the OECD come and look at Ireland from the outside, because they see us warts and all, but also they have a lot of experience in other countries and can see where practices elsewhere might be useful and potentially transferable also to Ireland. So we found the report extremely good, extremely useful. A couple of key points. I suppose the first and the most important message is that we need to have a mindset change. And we need to reallocate road space in Ireland. This is particularly relevant, of course, in the urban areas where we really need to give the roads back to people, for walking, for cycling, for public transport, as the case may be, for having a cup of coffee, for having your lunch outside, when the sun is shining. Just basically, we need to give the space back to people rather than always giving it to cars. So that would be really one of the very first messages that we're getting from the report.
And Mary, when you say give the roads back to people, what would that mean in practice?
Well, it means two very good examples. You take the square in Kildare Town. Up until now, it's been a car park. Literally, it's been a car park. They've taken the cars away and they've put in seating so people can go and sit and have a conversation or just enjoy the space at their leisure. Another example is if you take in Cork City during the COVID, Princes Street, the cars were taken away and all of the restaurants could use that street space then for tables and chairs. And they have a lovely kind of an umbrella cover over the street so that you can eat outside. So that's what we really mean by giving the space back to people so that people can use it for their own choice and their own leisure.
Now, for people who know me, I call myself an awfully proud Dublin resident, right? So yes. As I was driving into studio here in Tullamore this morning, I was paying close attention because I knew I was going to be interviewing you. And I was paying close attention to the quality of the roads in and around Tullamore. And I do that in Dublin because in Dublin, the streets and footpaths are not in the best condition. And there's a part of me that wonders that if we're going to make our streets and footpaths more accessible to, say, cyclists, for example, or walkers, we are going to have to look at the condition of them. We're in a cost of living crisis. To my eye, that would mean a massive amount of money going purely on the resurfacing of roads right around the country. And here in the Midlands, we have some roads, and here in Offaly in the countryside, we have roads that, quite frankly, you wouldn't see in parts of Nigeria, that they're that bad. The potholes are that large. The will hasn't been there to upgrade the infrastructure as of yet that I can see on a practical level. So, I know this is a positive report in terms of environmentally friendly initiatives, but how likely is it to actually come into place?
Well, I must say that whilst the council hasn't done a full analysis of the budget, but the budget that was just announced is allocating quite a large share of money to, shall we say, active travelling. That's for people to walk or to cycle and indeed public transport as well. And what you're talking about in terms of upgrading the roads, so, I mean, we're not saying roads are bad. I mean, roads have their purpose and that's absolutely important, and depending on where you live, you absolutely need a road. But what we're saying is that a road is a service to the community to get from A to B. But we also, and this was the second recommendation out of the report, we need to have much more what they call on-demand shared services. And really what they're saying there is, you want to go from A to B. You call up an app, whatever the case may be. The app will say you can go, yes, by car, by all means. You can go by public transport, train, bus, as the case may be. You can go by cycling, you can go by walking. Or did you know that there was a shared taxi, for example, option that you could link into in this space and, you know, reduce the price to the other person, but also yourself. So the idea is that on-demand shared services is where people have a choice. They can see it's going to take me an hour and a half if I leave now. And for commuters, this is a big thing. But if I don't leave until, say, 50 minutes from now, I'll save myself a half an hour sitting in a traffic jam. So basically, what the on-demand service notion is that we use, you know, big data and the Internet of Things and apps to make choices available for ourselves. And, you know, Ireland is at the forefront of technology in this space. And it probably one of the cheapest things that we can do is just to universally make these apps available in cities and in towns and in rural spaces so that people can link in and make choices for themselves about what the option is that they want to use in terms of getting from A to B.
Why do you think, like, I'm well used to using those apps when I'm in a larger urban centre in Ireland, and even when I travel abroad, you know, I use whatever it's called, Freenow or Uber, but it doesn't seem to have transferred, at least here to the Midlands. They're, like, to my knowledge, it's not possible to go onto an app and get, and my listeners can correct me if I'm wrong. And I'm curious as to why this hasn't transferred to more rural areas as of yet.
Well, there's one very good example, and it's not to promote the NTA as such, but in fairness to them, if you take outside Waterford, the local link, it has a schedule, so it leaves at 10 or 12 o'clock, whatever the time might be, but the route is somewhat variable. So you can phone in the day before and say, I'd like to take, you know, I'm going to take the 10 o'clock service, but I live, you know, half a mile from the route. Can you detour, pick me up so that I can take the local link into town to do my shopping? So this notion of, you know, in advance setting out what it is you want, what are your choices, what's the flexibility around the public service so that people can make a choice. And in this instance, for example, you don't have to take the car because the local link will come and collect you outside your door and bring you into the town for the shopping. So more of that is really what we're looking for, and we're only at the start of it. But it's a mindset. It's a mindset from the perspective of the service provider, be it a public or a private service provider. And it's also our own openness to using these kind of options and possibilities that will make our options and life more easy. So I would hope that out of all of this, we start a process where people think about choices when it comes to transport and travel and make the best choice that's relevant for themselves.
Now, look, I'm all for doing what we can, and I try in my own personal life, and I fail on a daily basis, but I try to do my bit for the environment. But one of the concerns I have with making more streets in urban areas pedestrianised is that we may be unwittingly cutting off access to people who are less mobile. We had a beautiful summer. We were lucky enough to be able to enjoy some time at the beach over the summer, and I started discovering different parts of Dublin because I had never really spent time on the beach in or around Dublin, and found myself one night during the summer in Malahide, where they had done this exercise of pedestrianised an entire street. They had tables and chairs out, so all the restaurants and the bars, you could order your food and sit outside, and the weather was fabulous, and it was a really festive atmosphere, and it was lovely to see, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. However, on walking back to my car, because I had about a half hour drive home, I noticed that on that street there was also the local health centre, and the local health centre had also fallen victim to this pedestrianisation. And I got myself to thinking, like, if you're somebody who uses a wheelchair or even maybe a walking stick and you're not great, you can't walk long distances, that it's cutting off access. I know the intentions are good, but do we need to be mindful of people who have disabilities, who have mobility issues? And when we do this, if we do this in towns around the country, that we're not isolating a group of people further?
100%. And in fact, that's another recommendation that's coming out of the analysis and from the council, is that, you know, ultimately the solutions that we need to adopt are the ones that the local community wants and needs. You know, we do not have a one-size-fits-all solution for every part of the country. Urban solutions will be different to rural solutions, and even communities' specific choices will be different depending on where they are. So really what we're calling for is, one, for people to think about it, and think about it in the local community, and the local community to identify what would be best for them. It might be, you know, a shuttle bus service to, let's say, GAA training on a Saturday, for example, for the kids. It might be flexibility of starting time at work so that people can, you know, carpool and come together and have flexibility as to the time that they would start. It might be, as you say, you know, maybe the local shop, you can come and do your shopping, but because your car will be parked elsewhere, have they got some sort of facility to carry your messages to the car? As you quite rightly pointed out, you know, health service, can people who have, you know, physical disabilities, can they actually get there? And, you know, how do you facilitate that? So there isn't, you know, just one single solution that you can do at the stroke of a pen in this instance. It has to be very relevant, tailor-made to the local community. And it's very important that the local community expresses what they want and then works with their own local authority in terms of delivering that. But I suppose what we're really asking for is for people to start the process of thinking, you know, think outside the box. Think, let's say we didn't have a car. What could we do? What would work for us? What wouldn't work? And then to start building the solutions.
I think one of the difficulties here when we talk nationally about efforts to tackle climate change and environmental issues is that at the moment, the Minister for the Environment is seen as being very much a city dweller. And there is a perception that maybe the government don't know what it's like to live in rural Ireland. So I wonder, is there a need for maybe for each county council to have its own mini climate advisory council that, you know, that the community could get together and work with authorities on a local level to start making efforts in their area and maybe to get the community involved in changes like this? Because it seems to me from what you're saying, this is not something the government can announce and it just kicks into action. This is something that the whole of society needs to be involved in.
Without any doubt, that's exactly the issue. And really, the question is, who are the multipliers? You know, the national, the local partnership groups, for example, the sustainable energy groupings, the groups within your own local town, might be a sporting group, it might be, you know, part of the school group or whatever, linking in with the local authority. And now local authorities, you know, in the legislation there that came out last year, they now have to do a climate action plan, a 5-year climate action plan. So as part of that, working with the local authority, you know, sometimes it can be as simple as having a one-way system in a town. You know, you don't need a lot of money just to put in a one-way system. But it's important that you do that in consultation with the community, that it works for them, that you think through what the implications are. And then you do it. Do it and see does it work. And if it doesn't work, go back and find a better solution. So, I mean, we're all about, you know, just trying new things here, opening our minds to the possibility of moving away from the car dependency that we have built into our system and that we have made an integral part of our transport system in Ireland. That's the issue that we really need to change. And that's the mindset, that's the transformation that's coming down the track. And it's going to be different in each place. You know, urban spaces will be different to rural spaces. And as I say, even in rural spaces, they won't all be the same. So we have to find the best solution for ourselves.
Well, Mary Donnelly, the chairperson of the Climate Advisory Council, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of Let's Go Green. I'd be very interested to hear what our listeners think of these proposals and what you would like to see happen in your local area. It always shocks me when I see my friends who have children involved in local sporting organisations. I can think of one family where there's three young boys, they're aged steps of the stairs, 2 years apart, and on a Saturday morning, mum and dad could be driving from one end of Offaly to the other to try and get them to three separate different GEA matches in their case. It doesn't seem very logical to me, but maybe we have to take a look at everything and take a root and branch review 2 of our transport system. Well, Mary, thank you so much for your time. We will be back with more after the break.
Thank you, Ashley.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Have you subscribed to our podcast yet? Well, now you can listen to the show at your leisure on Apple, Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search Let's Go Green on your preferred app. Please do subscribe, like and follow, and sure, go on, even write us a review. After the break, we're talking solar panels on your house. You're listening to Let's Go Green, and I think it's fair to say we're all looking at the cost of living and wondering if perhaps we can make some changes at home to save the environment and, you know, the bank balance as well. So have you considered installing solar panels? Earlier, Derek Martin of Martin Engineering Consultancy Services in Gaeshill, County Offaly, spoke to Will Faulkner on Midlands Today.
There is a lot of variables, as you can imagine, basically, that clean energy generation through solar PV is absolutely it's fantastic technology. It is well worth investing in, but the issue being is, one, the cost, the initial cost, the capital cost, and secondly then the return. Now, on a general panel size, you get in around 200 watts per meter squared. So if you could imagine that, basically 200 watts would be 10 meters squared would be enough potentially to boil a kettle. But that is at actually what a peak peak power. Or
okay, and so I'm guessing that means, you know, sometime in July when the stones, as opposed to a cold, dark evening November.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's exactly it. The peak power is literally on the longest day of the year at a certain time during the day, with your panels facing south, completely unabridged by any obstacle or any form of shading whatsoever, with a clean panel that's recently been installed.
Right. Okay, so they're not quoting returns based on the average typical overcast Irish day?
No. No, it's like, you will get return. It's free energy on the basis that for every day that there's light, you will get some form of rebate back to your system. But the kind of myth is that this will run your house consistently and have enough back to the export, or to export back to the grid, in order for you to retire quite early. That's valuable at the moment. That's not a viable option. In order for you to run a house, like the SAI website has a lot of information on solar panels and a lot of myth busting information as well. That's www.sai.ie. That will kind of determine the expectations versus the reality. The expectations is that you're going to get enough to run your house. The reality is you'll probably get enough to do about 40% of your electricity load, based on your orientation of your house, the size of your roof, and the amount of capital cost that you invest.
All right, so you will still have your bills one way or the other. You just might make a dent in them. Now, in considering how much of a dent, that comes back to how much roof area is covered by panels. And this week, hopefully tomorrow, the planning permission restriction on domestic homes will be lifted. So as a principle, is it fair to say the more panels, the better?
Absolutely, absolutely, because it is a catchment. The larger surface area you have to catch the sunlight, the greater return you'll have. But on a normal day, in an average home, potentially you'll have a very reduced occupancy level. So you may have somebody at home, you may have homemakers, you may have kids, you may have, or you may have two people out working in order to pay the wages, to pay the mortgage and to pay the utility bills. If you don't have a battery or any form of storage, your energy is lost. The investment that you've made is not really benefiting you whatsoever, because the time when you're away is the time where the peak sunlight is available for your panels to collect and to generate.
And here we come to more variables, because not all batteries are made equally. What sort of battery would a typical average home need?
You would, like, in order for you to set up a proper PV panel system, you would have, you'd have to have a large roof space, which preferably is facing south, with no tree line or any form of obstruction in it, in its path from the, what you call the solar azimuth, which is the angle from the sun to the ground. You would have, then it would basically, that generates DC power, which is battery, direct current power. That would, you would then have an inverter, which inverts it to AC power, which then goes into an interlock onto your distribution board, which is your current, your where your circuit breakers, etc., are in your house. So the batteries basically they range from different types of materials, and they range in different prices, but they also range in different quality levels. You can have batteries that will last you up to about 10, 15 years with nominal reduction in capacity, but they'll all have reduction in capacity as the as time goes by. Every time you charge your battery, if you don't keep it charged consistently, it'll start to lose energy. It'll start to lose its efficiency. And over the course of time, the material within the battery will start to dilapidate, and you'll need to replace your battery over a duration of time. You'll start to get heat, you'll start to get different forms of dilapidation in the battery casing. So, yes, no battery is created equal. They're all, you pay for what you get. You can get the best of the last 10 to 15 years, but then there's a sizable cost to replace.
Just on some terms that might be useful. So lithium ion, is that considered the best material?
Yes, lithium would be. Lithium holds a charge and it doesn't lose memory on the basis that, if you can recall the old mobile phones, that if you didn't charge it fully, you only charge it to a certain proportion of its the extent of it of its charge, you'd lose that the capacity.
Yeah, they called it the memory effect.
The memory effect, exactly. So it's quite similar now with the batteries, but the technology has moved on quite dramatically since then. Albeit in saying that, it's not completely eradicated. You will still lose efficiency. And any equipment that you charge, you recharge, and you consistently top up, eventually will start to lose its capacity, or start to lose its effectiveness. It's just a natural state of material. It will start eventually to lose its effectiveness.
Now, so I have heard a salesperson suggest that as an alternative to the battery, you could sell your excess back to the grid during the day. Now, are those feed-in tariffs in place yet?
No. The website, the SAI website again today, has stated that there is currently no obligation for energy suppliers to pay their customers for electricity they generate with their solar panels. It is up to energy suppliers to decide whether they wish to offer such a scheme to customers. That's verbatim. Now, on a bit of research I was doing, there has been a number of different workshops and a number of different consulting programs going on. The micro generation program has been in place by the government. So today, at this moment in time, a domestic customer can avail of a grant, but a business or a small public body or community area can avail of some form of can avail of grants as well, and a couple of other bits and pieces. But there's no absolutely tangent feed-in tariff agreed as of yet. You have then you have the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, who also are doing a subsidiary review, and they're working with the actual utility companies. So they've been in consultancy consultation for the last 2 years, a year and a half anyway. So they've finally agreed that you can do it, but how are we going to do it? So what I'm reading in now at the moment is that in order for the tariffs to be paid out, what they're looking for is all homes to have smart meters. They have to comply with the EU regulations, which basically there's a criteria list that you have to provide for clean energy. And once you comply with that, you will be potentially allowed to accumulate credits on your energy that you've sent back to the grid. But to this day, none of the electricity companies or none of the supply companies have actually agreed the tariff. And it is all surplus to the smart meters. And the smart meters completion is 2025. So it looks likely that there won't be an absolute sign-off on the tariffs until potentially 2025.
Wow.
And again, the obligation is on the suppliers. It's not government regulated. It's not regulated through the Commission or Regulation of Utilities. It'll be supplier. It'll be the suppliers' own.
Whatever tariff they come up with. Yes, and I have heard from listeners previously that some suppliers have discussed tariffs, but at a much lower price than they charge. So you might sell your electricity at 12 cent per unit, but they will be charging upwards of 40 cent per unit, depending on the time of day. One listener asks, can you box Clever with the battery? So you could potentially charge it using the mains during the cheaper hours of night and then use it during the day when the mains itself is dearer.
I like their thinking, but it requires a transformer, and because you're changing AC to DC and from DC to back to AC. So your battery actually charges in DC and then it goes through the inverter to the mains. But in order to reverse that, you'll actually have to get a transformer to change it from, or an inverter to change it from AC from the mains to DC to charge your battery, and then back again. And you will have voltage drop, and you will have power loss, and you will have power coefficients that will basically reduce that sufficiently enough, and then of course the capital cost. So eventually, if you spread it out, it'll probably cost you more money.
An accountant has called as well to point out a potential income tax liability on any earnings from units sold back to the grid.
Yeah, there's a probable. Yeah, to be honest, we're dealing in 2020 with the Irish economy. So you know, if it's not breedable, it's going to be taxed. So if you are generating a revenue from, if you have a large, like they're talking up to 300 meter squared of paneling, which is about, you know, 6 kilowatt. And if you're only using 2-3 kilowatts during the day, you're potentially selling back 4 kilowatt kilowatt hours. So you could probably make a fairly sizable sum that you'll be in credit every single month. So there's no way that the Irish government would allow that to, you know, without potentially taking their 20% from it, 23% from it.
Well, as it stands anyway, potential income tax liability, maybe an exemption will be considered, but so far no confirmation of that. Now, let's briefly touch on businesses, because a few people have queried. They're business owners with large roof areas, but they've been told that it requires some sort of license or approval from ESB Networks. And while there's no promise of such a license being granted, the mere survey costs hundreds of euro.
That's at the end of the day, the ESB networks are kind of they're a supply company, a state body generated to manage the supply of the electricity. The directive by the EU is to get to 40% by 2030 of clean energy, renewables. I don't envisage, especially with the announcement from the government last week, that businesses and farms and other large companies can avail now of grants, which they weren't up until last week. And also the fact that they don't have to look for planning permission, which they used to up until last week, up to 300 metres squared. I don't envisage ESB being in any way an obstacle on the clean generation. At the moment, they're struggling with the introduction of data centres, with the introduction of and trying to get as many wind farms in as possible, in order to kind of substantiate the amount of energy that we're going to be utilising. Like, heat pumps are a huge drain on the system. They're a fantastic renewable energy, but they're a large drain on the electrical system as we have it at the moment. That wasn't envisaged in the infrastructure plan years ago. Now they're having to sort of work to that tune. So I don't assume that the ESB should be in any way whatsoever an obstacle to it. Mm.
And you haven't even mentioned electric cars yet, which, again, we've a target by 2030 of selling no cars with internal combustion engines. So
there's another crux as well, basically. Like, it's fantastic that you can actually charge your electric car from your house, and people are availing of these grants to get these electric chargers placed on the side of their house, and all new houses with a BER rating of A2 shall have electric PV panels, but they'll also have an electric car charger. But one thing that the older houses pre-1991 definitely and maybe pre-2015 or 2012 might find is that the cable that's going from their substation into their house isn't capable of running such a large load. So if you have to put in a heat pump, or if you have to put in any form of without PV, and if you have to put in an electric car charger, potentially you're going to you're going to get an awful lot of difficulty in your electrical supply, and potentially to the point where you actually burn out your cable in the ground because it's not rated. None of this infrastructure was ever put in place pre-2017. So we're running on the retrospective issue that we want to put an electric charger in our house. We want to put a heat pump, but we don't have a cable big enough from the substation, so we have to put in PV. We don't use the car charger when we're away at work. We don't use the heat pump when we're away at work, so we have to put a battery in.
Mm.
So it's
yeah, I there are so many variables and potential extra costs hidden in the equation.
Yeah.
Coming back to that opening question about return on investment, and again, maybe the domestic return is going to be very different to the business return. Businesses, most of them at least, will be using most of their power during daylight hours. So maybe the rate of return on an investment is greater in that setting than it is at home. But could you give us, using some averages and very rough numbers, what a realistic expectation might be?
On return for investment, you're looking at basically the size of the panel versus the utilization. So if you have a large family in a house and there's four or five rooms, there's PlayStations, there's televisions, the whole lot running at the same time, and you have they're in house during the day, homeschooled, whatever. Yes, return on investment is quite likely in quite a short space of time. You don't have that situation if you're working to pay your mortgage and you're not in the house and this, that, and the other. You're gonna struggle to retain it. when it starts getting into the large, the A2 houses, where you have a heat pump, so your heating and your hot water is being generated by electricity, that will reduce your payback time absolutely exponentially, because you're not paying gas, you're not paying...
And potentially electric car added to that mix as well, you'll accelerate the payback because you won't have the petrol or diesel cost anymore.
True. If you have, like, the main point of this is size to suit. So, like, if you go into a retail offering and you want a solar panel, and it gives you a solar panel, and you stick it up on the roof, and then you realise solar panel is only covering 2 or 3 light bulbs, but it's going to cost you another 5 years to pay it back to the credit union. It's not worth the while. But if you actually have a scoped design for your house developed so as that actually your payback is clear and concise based on the kilowatt rating of your last year's utilisation, you will make payback. The important thing for to realise with any payback, a life cycle or anything like that is the life cycle of the material. If the battery lasts only 5 years because you bought a Taiwan cheap version, the you'll be replacing the battery before you pay the capital cost. So you'll never earn the payback period. You'll never complete the payback period. But if you get a good battery, you store the energy. At night, you utilise it. You're not paying an electricity bill. You're only paying a standing charge. And it will pay it back within the five-year terminology, but it has to be sized to suit. There's no point in you buying 300 meter squared of electricity, of energy, and you dissipating it to the atmosphere or back into the grid without you getting any revenue for it, and having that capital cost on you for years, and then also the maintenance and everything else that goes with it. So you have to size it to suit. Your house is unique, your house is specific, you utilise it in different times during the day and the evening, so it actually has to be sized to suit.
Yeah, Derek, I think that's the moral of the discussion, that it's not one size fits all, and it's very hard to work out a return on averages because there is no such real thing as the average. So, look, you've covered a lot of ground, an awful lot of ground. Derek, thank you for your time.
The only advice I give, Will, is basically if you look at your ESB bill for the last year and just trace it. So if in the case, and you look at the worst case scenario on the 21st of December, between at 12 o'clock. That's your best bet. That's your size of your power grid that you need. You need to be able to cover that, or to be able to support that at least.
You're listening to Let's Go Green, and I'm afraid that's all we have time for on today's show. If you'd like to be featured on the show, please do drop me an email at letsgogreen@midlands103.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and I'll be back same time next week here on Let's Go Green.